내 쉬는 쉬고 따라오라 하는 게 있는 체비야. 그 여유를 위한 마실이 담에서 자랑시하니 이 주류도 고급 말아야 나도
망했습니다. Perhaps we have something here in common at the Zentech radio show when you hear Tibetan going, because it sounds a lot like the tech talk that comes up in our regular show when we do the tech talk. That's from 1 to 2 p.m. this time every other Monday here on KVMR FM Nevada City. It is the Zentech radio show. It's a tech show where your hosts, both of whom are in the studio today, and that's myself, Paul Castro, and my cohort and partner here, Mr. He's not saying anything, he hasn't plugged in.
Oh, you know what? I'm sitting here trying to adjust some levels, and boy, I just really adjusted something really loud.
Yeah, you've lost your ding-dong there too, Glenn.
Yes, I did.
We're talking about the windy-proof microphone attachment.
What did we call that funny kid that would come in here? His initials are MK, but didn't we call him something else?
Yeah, Top Ramen.
Top Ramen, yeah. He called it my condom, my microphone condom.
Yeah, that's the breeze-proofing for your mic.
Do that. Good afternoon, folks. I'm Glenn Farr. He's Paul Castro, and it's Zentech.
That's what we do, and it's a regular occurrence here, and it's always a good thing to tell you who we are, and we've done that, which is the community radio station and the identity for the FCC. That also includes the fact that transmitting from high atop the ex and extinct volcano Mount Pluto in the Tahoe Truckee area out and over the lake where I was yesterday and got sunburned, translator K286AN in Truckee at 105.1 with a magnificent 10 watts of power. I tried receiving it on the North Shore. Not too much luck there. We are working on it.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. That being done, go paperless and think green. The calendar is a public service of KVMR. Let's see what happens with a mighty crossfade here. I'll just push two buttons at once and just kill this thing. There it goes. Yeah, that doesn't work. Push that one. We're tweaking them up a champ today. It's supposed to crossfade between them. What do you think of that, Glenn? Is that really klutzy?
You know, it was okay. I'm just trying to figure out. There's a way to do that over there, and I can't remember how to do it.
Yeah, folks, we have a computer here. That's amazingly enough because this is the Zentech radio show. It's where we mess around with computers. It's the one show during the week where we are totally permitted by ourselves and our own conscience to mess things up in public and say here's what not to do. For many years now, we've used a piece of software called WaveCart, and it actually loads up WAVE files in MP3s. Captions them in such a way that you can tell how long they'll last and what format they're in, and we push on them. Now, they're all queued up here, just like a cart box, stacked vertically, about seven of them, one above the other, and pushing one play is supposed to fade the previous one. But we got that. Never mind. What you got going on, Glenn?
Not a whole lot. Just the standard thing that we want to let everybody know. Always back up. You never can back up enough. And media, external media, is so inexpensive these days. You can use a flash drive. You can use CDs, DVDs. And so there's all sorts of different ways to do it. But that's always my mantra. And
it's become like a commodity, actually, to say, you know, the price of an oil barrel, a barrel of oil. The price of flash media now I've seen below $20 for 8 gigabytes of flash.
Yes.
So as I say, there's now no longer an excuse not to back things up, but there is a better excuse if you try to restore it. So in the end, remember the mantra for here, which is not the backup that's so important as what happens when the time comes to restore. So trust in Allah, but tie your camel, which means check what's on the flash drive when you think it's backed up by putting it in another machine. And pretend that awful scenario that you've actually lost everything.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And we do want to thank all of you for being members and listener supporters of KVMR Radio, and also
Ohmsoft Technologies, a regional family-owned internet service provider started by UCD students in 1997, providing internet services to suit individual needs and committed to customer privacy. More information is at ohmsoft.com. Ohmsoft, the enlightened internet solution. Thank you. Homework. It's that kind of the spot of the time of the day.
Yeah, you can check out some of the homework that Paul has already done by going online at zen.kvmr.org. You can click on shows, and then it says to next show, which is today, July 13th, and Paul's got some wonderful things. I wonder if we should ask people to guess what I did finally. Or if we should just tell them, because, yeah, we'd take too many phone calls to get there, probably.
Is it like the 10th caller gets some? What do we give as prize? We used to give cookies and milk, but it's not Christmas.
No, it's not, and I haven't been baking lately, so I'll tell you what I got. You know what I got? I got an iPhone.
Yeah, Mr. Gizmo Gadget. It's the product of recycling, too, right, Glenn?
Yes, it is. Yeah. I bought it used through a friend of mine. He found it from a friend of his and passed it along to me, so that worked out wonderfully. And I at my home computer, because I'm still on dial-up, I actually have iTunes downloading. It was 73 megabytes. It started last night, and it's still going when I
wow.
left to come down to the show today at noon. So it's trucking away, and I'm downloading it here on my little 10-inch netbook. So I'll have it here, and then I can actually use a flash drive and transfer it to home if it doesn't download successfully there. But you have to have iTunes on your computer in order mm-hmm. to interface with the iPhone.
Yeah, and ironically, Glenn asked me this. He goes, you know, how can you get access to the iPhone like a hard drive if you don't have iTunes? So you can plug it in somewhere and read and write things off the drive that's inside. Off the flash drive that's inside mm-hmm. the iPhone, the 16. What has it got, 16 or 8 gig?
The 8 gig.
The 8 gig one, right. Same as me. The answer is, ironically, you can't actually read the device as a hard drive unless you have iTunes and check the flag that says use the device as an external hard drive. Then you can plug it into any machine anywhere else.
Yeah.
So at a pinch you can actually pull stuff off that flash drive and use it just like as a giant flash drive, but you have to plug it in once to iTunes somewhere. Also bear in mind, and this came up and you were aware of it, that you can't sync to more than one machine at a time and expect same things to happen. There are ways, but routinely you would pick a primary machine it's going to go on, and you've chosen one already.
No, oh, I haven't, because I haven't installed the iTunes yet and even gone there, so it's going to be a learning process. I like the phone so far. I've actually taken some pictures, and it's fun. I was driving down to Sacramento yesterday. My dad broke his wrist, and we were driving down and actually did a video of him talking about how he broke his wrist, and then my brother's dog was in the car, so I took a couple of pictures of him. And it's so easy to, you know, go to my brother's listing for his phone and his name, and I associated the dog's picture. You know,
so when the brother calls, the dog's picture comes up.
Yeah, I can even
Does
have
he
it
know
go
this?
Bark, bark. He may now.
Right, yeah, because you won't hear when he calls. There's also accessories. It's a bit like, I always think for us guys that the iPhone is a bit like the Ken and the Barbie dolls for the little gals, which is there's a plethora. That's a collective noun for the coiled gizmos and pluggy gadgets that one can get. The most interesting, or the most useful gadget and gizzy for me was the video cable that you can plug into the base of the unit that has basically composite video output. It's got the red and white audio outputs and then the yellow video output. So you mm-hmm. can plug it into the front or the back of your reasonably modern TV.
Mm-hmm.
When I buy them from China at an astronomical cost of about $5 or $6, they don't always work right because the Apple unit is $49 and contains a special chip. The Chinese model, sometimes you have to unplug it and plug it back in again, and then the TV goes, oh, that device, and the iPhone goes, oh, that video there. When you buy this from somewhere like eBay, make sure that it refers specifically to the model of computer you've got. The cable fits all sorts of different units like iPods and iTouches and iPhones. It's very important the description says this will work with the blur up, fill in the blank, what you've got. They're not all made alike. I'm hearing a humming here. Does somebody not know the words?
I'm not
that?
Sure. I wonder if is it me or you?
Well, I don't think it's you or me humming, but it's our equipment humming. Yeah. We can draw attention to this stuff, you know. So
because yeah. we're our technology
That's
show.
Right, and it's the plague of the 60 hertz hum. It's as good enough a reason that anyone gets fiber optic and digital stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This studio is not 100% digital yet, so it's creeping in somewhere.
One thing that I did this week is over at my favorite store down in Sacramento, Fry's Electronics, they had on sale and a lot of open boxes, but I'm like, hey, I'm going to give this a try. Let me see if I can tell you what was on sale. It was by Philips, a HD digital TV antenna, very small, about the size of a hardback book.
Oh, yeah?
And if I can find it.
And you can
here.
Plug this into your computer, no?
Well, you could, but I got it for a friend of mine who, after the digital conversion for his little TV in Sacramento, which he just had the standard rabbit ears, he lost Channel 10, Channel 6 went away. So this was $17 on sale at Fry's, and it's called a passive indoor antenna, which I guess means you don't have to plug it into the power.
It's not powered itself, no.
And it's fairly attractive looking. It's like a book you'd fold open, then it's got two antennas you can pull up. Put it in, and I'm sitting here giving, you know, graphic displays, and nobody can see me.
And waving your arms.
It allowed him, now he can get all three or four channels of Channel 6, and Channel 10 comes in now. So I moved around a little bit.
I mean, is it directional?
Yes, it is directional. So
right.
Other than the channels that it added when we rescanned, mm-hmm. I don't know that there are any other channels available if you had a better antenna.
That's what I wondered.
Because it got the standard ones, channel 3, channel 6, channel 10, channel 13.
Are you saying it got them back 19, after the conversion?
Yes.
Ah, right.
Yeah, because he lost 6 and 10
and
something else
back.
After the conversion, so yeah. Those came back.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see that worked. And it's you know, just for a small TV in an apartment. And I was listening to Channel 10's 11 o'clock news today, and they had their station engineer on. And he did recommend that probably the best way is to put an outside new antenna that's designed for the new digital signal, which would be a digital antenna as well as an HD antenna.
More than that, the actual signal that's coming in the antenna is benefited by having more elements in the array. So if your antenna used to have 10 elements and you add 50% to that, you won't get 50% more signal. You get some more signal. Interesting comment, though, Glenn, about the antenna device in the house being directional. That means two separate things. One is because you're gathering the signal from a particular direction, so you presumably wave the thing around until you got a better signal, right?
Mm-hmm.
What that means is that it's actually increasing the level of the signal by reflecting it from a reflector onto the receiving element of this array. And the second thing it does is it manages to discriminate other signals by blocking them away from the other side of the reflector. So it selectively boosts the signal from the chosen direction and rejects signals from either side, which may have been sufficient to gain traction on this digital signal, which is very much more demanding, as everyone knows.
Okay.
It's calmed down a bit. The FCC said there were, I think at one point during a day or two, something over 750,000 calls came in a fairly short period of time.
I can imagine that. Yeah. And, you know, for those of you still struggling, you know, hopefully you'll be able to try things. And I don't hesitate. I purchased this item with the intent of, if it doesn't work, I'm going to take it back.
Mm-hmm.
And typically you have 30 days to return mm-hmm. something. And the new antennas don't look as monstrous and as horrible. I wouldn't say horrible, as the old kind of triangular shape that you have to put up on a 30-foot pole on your roof. Uh-huh. This fellow said, you know, if you just set this outside... Oh, and you may want to, you know, play with where you put it outside, mm-hmm. Especially if you've got a home. He says if you have an apartment, you can get the larger antenna. They're about $35 to $60. And actually set it behind your TV unit
uh-huh.
and plug it in. He says sometimes that's just enough to bring in that extra signal. You know, bear in mind this one here for $17 is very small, like I said, like a hardcover book in size. And these others are about the size of a... What would you say? Maybe a 2x2 painting, 2x3 painting.
Ironically, that when you double what you pay for the antenna, it doesn't give you double the signal. Many of these things are diminishing returns, so you get some incremental increase by doubling the amount of metal in the reflectors and directors, the little prongy elements on the array. And the signal will increase maybe 5 or 10% if you double the number of arrays. You can maybe spend twice as much and it'll increase it 5%. What else was I going to say? That's it on that subject.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, don't forget, if you're amongst those listeners who have trouble with the KVMR signal 89.5, a lot of what we've been talking about applies to you too. And you can typically use a TV antenna to do this. The difference between indoors and outdoors is indoors the signal may be plenty strong, but it's having to encounter reflection. So any bits of metalwork in your house result in what they call path differences that create interference. So being outside, you'll still have path differences and interference, but they will be less. And strangely, you don't actually need an obstructed signal. Metal things off to the side within about 3 to 5 degrees of the beam, like the famous example of gasometers or electrical pylons. The signal will have two paths, one straight to you from the transmitter and the other one bounced off something that's a few degrees off the line of fire.
Mm-hmm.
And that will create on TV ghosting, which digital TV really hates, or on FM signals like KVMRs here, it'll actually create a deadening or a damping of the signal. Take a look at our website, do, at kvmr.org. David Levin, General Manager, has an article on there and various pieces from the Chief Engineer about how to improve your marginal radio signal, even at 1:20 in the afternoon.
And some of that even applies to television signals also. If you want to give us a call, you probably have some more homework items, but let's get folks lined up if they do want to call in. 265-9555 is our local phone number. Toll free from other parts of Northern California, 1-800-355-5867. And again, Paul, thank you for doing your part to help save economically and environmentally by doing the flea market for me last week and a couple of weeks prior, when I was down in Sacramento, rather than me, you know, doing a 2.5 hour round trip to come up here and back. And the gas involved, you very graciously took time out of your day and came in and did the flea market. So thank
I
you
legged
very
it
much
over here.
That.
So the only gas that was involved in emissions that despoiled the environment was my blood, sweat, and tears while walking in here. And it's the ultimate recycling because we're not actually breaking the stuff down and reconstituting it. It's going from person to person and improving the community. You can't lose. Can you lose?
No.
I've got another gizmo that I played with. Have you seen this? Did I show you this thing, Glenn?
I'm not sure.
It's a typical black box. It's made by the company Netgear that's better known for wireless equipment. This is the EVA 9000 Digital Entertainer Elite. It's what's generically known as a media server. It's about the size of a DVD player. It's in a black box. It has one light to show you it's powered on and one slot in the front where you can withdraw a serial drive. The general description of this device as a media server is that it's able to store any kind of multimedia media, meaning movies and music and pictures and slides and slideshows and PDF documents and so forth. You can store any of those things at liberty on this machine, which comes with a 500 gig SATA drive, and connect it up to the TV interface, which you can do with one off. See if I can get this listing correctly. You can connect up to your TV with HDMI high definition media interface. Number two, you can connect up with composite video. Number three, you can connect up with component video. They're different. And number four, you could connect up, if you felt like it, with S-video, which is a better form of video than any of the compounded signals going back and forth. So the four principal types of video are available out the back of this thing. It has an Ethernet port. It has wireless. What else does it have? An infrared controller, which gives you in your hand a device that looks like a DVD controller. Now, the fun starts. You connect it to your TV. You associate it with your wireless. It then becomes a networked access storage device. The 500 gigabyte hard drive is shared on your wired or wireless network. And this will become the destination to which you will send your music files and your movies. Now life starts to get interesting, because obviously I compared this to an Apple TV, or what the heck they call it. I'm sure it's called ITV. A device made by Apple that you can connect up to your widescreen TV with a hard drive that does similar things. This one's much more interesting. It's one of those devices that appears to be able to play chocolate cookies if you put it in there. You can store, get this, an ISO image of a DVD as long as it's decrypted. So for those of us that have DVDs that are an ISO image ready for burning, store that 4.2 gigabyte image on this drive and it will play it complete with menus. If you've got it, all of this stuff in the folder Video TS, and the techs out there will know what I mean by that. If you've got all the components of the DVD video stored in a folder called Video _ TS, likewise it'll play them. If you've got AVIs or MP4s or MP3s or any of those funky extensions, it'll play them. If you've got JPEGs, it'll play them. If you've got GIF files, it'll play them, each according to their media type. So GIFs are obviously images out of your camera. It's happy to play those. There isn't a lot it won't play. There are exceptions. It won't play any of the digital rights management protected files that originate from Apple or from the Windows Media Player. Life gets even more interesting. It's got two USB slots in it. If you connect up your iPhone to one of the USB slots, your iPhone now joins the media it's able to catalog and play. If you connect a large USB external hard drive to one of the USB slots, that hard drive becomes a storage medium, so you can use it as a backup device with playable media. I've been looking for this for quite a while. The nearest equivalent I found was something part of the Linux project that's called MythTV, M-Y-T-H, MythTV. Well, you'd have a regular PC with a multiple video output device and a TV tuner or a cable input. It'd be a regular computer with multimedia inputs and outputs. You would install a special species of Linux containing this MythTV interface. The end result would be the same. Under the hood of this device, I'm describing the EVA9000, which comes in at, I think, $399. Under the hood, the software that runs on the EVA9000 is Linux, not surprisingly. You won't see that. What you'll see is what's known in the trade as a 10-foot interface. Now, look that up. What a 10-foot interface is, it means the kind of interface, the kind of buttons and text that you can see from at least 10 feet away, because unlike a computer, you're not sitting a couple feet away on a seat. You're actually sitting well back in your lounge chair staring at this darn thing.
Okay.
And yes, it will work with analog TVs, although it does have HDMI, so it will work quite well, just fine, with older CRT displays. Somebody I heard calling that the other day a bottle view, is it? Because of the big glass bottle inside it, a bottle viewer? slang term for the big CRT as opposed to an LCD screen.
Oh.
Do you remember that term?
Yeah, I don't remember the term. I remember that...
Let's continue recycling those, folks. They are turning up, and I periodically recycle those. I keep in mind those clients that are getting flat-screen TVs and then look for those people that need that replaced. This is not for watching TV up here because that's basically going away. It's tending to be used by people up here for watching DVDs, connecting to their computers, connecting to their EVA 9000 Digital Entertainer Elite. There you go. That's my blurb over, my friend. Was that fun?
It was.
I went on a bit, but I can't help it.
I have a question for you. I pushed the App Store button on the iPhone, and it goes into MG's account, and I can't figure out how to get there from the iPhone to sign out.
What we're talking about here is Glenn's got his iPhone, and you can actually buy the applications straight on that device. I don't know how you sign out of one and sign into the other.
Okay.
Mikhail set this up for Glenn, so what I would do is buy stuff on Mikhail's account if I were you.
Oh, well, that's a good idea. Okay.
Yeah, no problem, just don't bother.
Is that the phone ringing?
No, that's me banging the table like that. I wonder who it could be. Could it be MG?
I wonder.
Yeah.
As I said, I'm still playing with that.
I haven't had a chance to see this. Glenn's talking about the fact that he has got, and I have got, the iPhone 2G, the second generation. The third generation came out about a year ago, and then in the last couple of weeks, the advanced 3G-S came up, S for speed. I don't see, in my case, any particular need or urge to get that, because the one thing I don't do of my iPhone is get high-speed internet access, except when I'm in wireless range. I'm not going to pay anybody for the privilege of getting high-speed internet from the cell phone network and have to rack up $70 a month or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's a $30 additional to your existing AT&T account.
And a contract.
Oh, I'm not sure if they make you do a contract.
I'd be surprised if they didn't.
If you have your own phone, I don't think the contract's required.
Don't know. Something dinged, have you got anything?
That was me. I was just installing the MobileMe, which hopefully was a good thing to do.
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Actually, MobileMe, you'll notice, if you get yourself iTunes, you'll notice an application comes down called MobileMe.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you an account of what was, I believe, formerly known as Mac.com, MAC.com, which is now ME.com. What MobileMe allows you to do is that if you've got contacts and emails and, I don't know, schedules and who knows what all else on your iPhone, it'll store them out on the web so they're visible to you in a centralized location. It behaves like what they call an exchange server. It isn't, but it behaves like that, so that you have a central repository of all this stuff. Instead of having to transfer them between one machine and the other and it going out of step and out of sync, that's the upside, and I think you get a free account for 3 months or something. The downside, if there is one, is that it's, $99 a year or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it works on the PC, works on the Apple Mac, and also works on the iPhone, so it can interact between those three media and keep all your contacts and appointments and schedules and emails all stepped and up to date. And you get an ME.com account, like Glenn at ME.com, if you felt like it.
Okay.
$100 a year.
Yeah, probably won't do that.
Yeah.
And I love the wireless part of this. I was sitting in a restaurant there in Sacramento last night having dinner, and I was able to check my email because the restaurant offered free Wi-Fi.
I'd suggest, basically, when people get an iPhone, or when you look at one, typically like I do, before you plunk out or splurge for such a thing, there's a period of time you'd spend actually thrashing around with it, seeing what it does. And it's off-putting that it's unlike my Palm Trio that I used to have. Off-putting is that it has no actual tactile keyboard on it. You're touching the screen,
right,
and little techlets underneath the glass are what you touch, and you aim your finger at them and push them. I wish somebody had said to me and saved me a lot of time that obviously you're going to miss, and there's nothing tactile to indicate when you hit the Q that you meant to hit its neighboring key, the letter E.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is, yeah, you do have to look at it. There's literally no touch typing. That makes sense. So you actually have to look at what you're doing. So even more so than before, don't drive doing this thing like I sometimes do when I'm very naughty. But when you touch that screen, the letter pops up above your finger, so you're not blocking it out. If you made a mistake and you see you meant to hit the E and the Q comes up, don't let go. Move your finger slightly to one side.
I didn't know that.
Then the correct letter comes up, then you let go, and it becomes second nature. It's, for me, even my fat old thumb does it. I wondered for a while if I ought to have a wart on the tip of my thumb, like a guitar player has, you know, calluses to do this. No, my fat old thumb does the trick fine, because it goes for the... It calculates where the center of the pressure is. So even a big thumb that spans several keys is fine. It calculates the center of the action of that.
Okay.
When you correct stuff, have you dealt with that yet, Glenn? Have you had to correct text
yet? I've had some difficulty, yes, the very first letter, and I couldn't get back to it without just backspacing and erasing everything I'd typed.
The answer is, if you've got several lines of text in a text message, now I've got this unit, I text message a lot because it makes it relatively easy.
Mm-hmm.
You just touch on the text that you've already printed. You've got two or three lines of text, and something's wrong in the second line. Put your finger on top of it for about a second, and a little magnifying glass comes up, showing you a cursor where you are, and you slide your finger back and forth, and you don't have to look under your finger because you can't. The magnifier is above your finger. And it took me a while to figure that one out. There's also a cut and paste I haven't figured out yet.
The copy and paste I figured out. Mikhail showed that to me yesterday. Uh-huh. Now, the I didn't know about the magnifier. Now, is that built into the version 3 of the software?
Right. And version 3 has just come out. There's no compelling reason not to get it as long as you know what you're doing if you have a phone that isn't, shall we say, straight on the contract and on the... In the go-gets. What was he going to say? A number of apps that you had to get ahead of time for the old version are now built in. So if you have the home screen with the icons on it and you go left, left, left on it a few times, meaning you go to the leftmost screen, a search window comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows you to search anything in the iPhone, whether it's media or emails or contacts or anything else. That was missing from older versions. It's worth it for that alone. It really is.
Yes.
A global search.
I was glad to see that, and again, do you go left? So
yep.
And up and down, looking at pictures. Again, I'm still just blown
That's
away
the
by the picture
part of
quality.
It, isn't it?
Yeah,
it really is. What should we do? Should we say to people, or should we keep this to ourselves and have fun? That it is 81 degrees outside. It's 1:31 in the afternoon, and you can. Why not? Give us a wee call on our phones.
Sure.
Yeah, 265-9555. What's the other one?
1-800-355-KVMR. I'll bring up something. Somebody just asked me, and I hope I give them the right answer, Paul.
Mm.
I know you'll tell me the correct answer.
Oh, yeah, you think?
They were at an RV park
uh-huh.
where free wireless was available.
Yeah.
But it was unsecured, which means you can just, with your wireless device, double-click on that and attach to that network.
Right.
Across the street, they uh-huh. could walk over there with their laptop to the local library. And they had a secured wireless connection, which
yeah.
basically meant when you clicked on that secure wireless connection, it accepted anything you typed in as
yeah.
a password. So you would type in your name, so they at least knew, supposedly, who
yeah.
you were.
Yeah.
He would not do his banking at the RV park because it said unsecure, but he would do his banking at the library because it said secure. And I told him, I said, all that is to get into that router. It's not talking about how secure your connection to the
That's
internet
correct.
Is. So, good. I'm glad that I was correct in letting him know that. And the lady at the RV park said, well, somebody sitting next to you could see everything you're doing.
That's still true if it's a secured network.
Even
if somebody's
if it's
logged
your network, and if they're malicious and have the appropriate, you know, software to eavesdrop on you,
right?
So it's possible anywhere. Hopefully, people aren't doing that. But all that when you're looking at the various networks available, and they'll say secure, and there's the lock, and then they show the unlock, and it's unsecured. All that means is you need a password to get onto that network. Once you get onto the either network, secured or unsecured, all things are equal.
Mostly.
Mostly.
Now, what will happen is if you have the two side by side and you're on an insecure network, unsecured network, and I'm on a secure network, the wireless traffic, the actual radio signals that are going back and forth from your unsecured network could be snooped. Somebody can pick up the wireless signals and decrypt them and decode them and figure out what the traffic is. That's true.
Okay.
That's harder but not impossible to do if you've got a secured network. There is a great misuse of the word secured, because in the end what will happen is if you're using a banking site the way it's intended and you, Glenn, are using an unsecured wireless network,
correct,
the encryption is performed end-to-end between your so-called browser, which is Internet Explorer, Firefox, and the bank. So it doesn't actually matter what happens in between. The real security problem starts from the fact that if you've got a bunch of people connected to the same network, they're basically sharing the network with each other. So if you've got an improperly secured personal computer, or a personal computer with a security problem of its own where the firewall is turned off
mm-hmm.
or inappropriately shared, everybody on the same network as you can probably see and read your machine if they felt like, often by accident.
Okay.
Being so-called secured doesn't change that. I'll give you an example of where security is a misnomer. The cabin boy working on a luxury galleon many years ago said to the captain, he said, "Captain, if I know where your silver tea set is it lost?" And the captain says, "Well, of course not. If you know where something is, it's not lost." He goes, "Well, it's right at the bottom of the ocean." So you can be secure in the knowledge of where it is, but it will do you no good.
Exactly.
So bear that in mind and trust in Allah and always tie your camel.
Yes. Let's take our first phone call today.
I'd love to do that.
I did it.
Ooh, you did?
I did.
I hate when that happens.
I've got the little screen up on
the other side of the
computer.
Good afternoon, call you live.
I'm not at the bottom of the ocean.
No.
But I don't know where you are.
I'm down in Bitney Springs.
Okay.
Down near the creek, and I'm wondering, I don't have HD TV, mm-hmm. I don't have TV, I have an old one that isn't hooked up.
Doesn't work anymore.
I don't have satellite, and
right.
I don't have... Would one of those antennas perhaps pick up local stations for me?
There are no local TV stations.
And you would just have to try. You would have to get two things, though, because you probably, like you said, you have an old TV.
Yes.
It is not digital ready, so you'd have to pick up a converter box, which you can get a coupon from the federal government for $40. And most places are charging either $50 to $70, $50 to $80 for that box. So you're going to pay $10 to $30. Dollars or so additional to get that the digital tuner, basically, is what
yeah.
it is, and then connect that to your TV. If your TV is so old that you don't have that coaxial cable in the back, then you're out of luck. You'll have to get another TV.
Can you get internet there, caller?
I have dial-up, and HughesNet, I think, is the only one that's available.
So you don't have DSL available through AT&T?
No,
Parts of Bitney Springs have got that, but you've obviously put in the application and it hasn't worked. Is that true?
That's true.
Yeah, and with satellite, I think maybe you called about this before, somebody else did. If you start watching video over satellite, you'll rack up the limit on traffic through the thing before long.
Right. I'm just wondering if I get... my TV is not as old. I have the cable coax.
Oh, yeah. Good. Okay. Well, what I would recommend, and both of these things you can return if they don't work, and that is you go down and you can get these locally at Radio Shack. In Auburn, Best Buy, Sacramento, Fry's Electronics, various places carry the converter box, and then also get the antenna. Now, I don't know what they call it. It's basically a flat square thing. If you were to have a square serving tray,
that's it's a directional TV antenna.
And my guess is that you can probably prop it up outside. It might do better on a pole, but obviously the higher you get it, because it's still a bit line of sight.
Can you see over Lake Wildwood at all?
No, I can't even see the creek. I'm way down in a little hole.
Okay, probably won't work for any of that. Bad news, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
My guess.
Well, I can give it a try, though. I have a place where I can put it up. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, and good luck with that. Please do let us know if that works.
You know, I will.
Okay.
Thanks.
I'll let you know if it doesn't work.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, caller. Oh, I pushed the button. Did you?
That you did. I didn't.
I don't care. Good afternoon, caller. You're live on Zentech.
And that's beep. You're the only one there, so you got to say hi to us.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't hear a beep, but anyway.
You did, too. I said beep.
Oh, okay. Oh, man, you got me.
I love it.
Just a little bit of info. My mom lives down in Meadow Vista, and I tried a Zenwell, I think it was a ZAT970 and a DTV PAL Plus box. I tried both of those. She has an antenna that's probably about 20 foot off the ground. That was an old FM-AM UHF TV antenna. She gets zero signal because Meadow Vista is kind of down in the hole
by
Sugar Pine Mountain there.
Okay.
So she gets zero. So people way down in the valley or any of these valleys up here probably are going to have pretty bad luck, at least from my experience with my mom down in Meadow Vista.
Right.
Right. So, now, bear in mind that your older antennas can work. The newer antenna is recommended.
Right.
And you might have better shot.
But
and again,
she gets like no signal on any channel when the thing scans. There's like nothing. So I'm thinking it's somewhat doubtful because, like I say, Meadow Vista is blocked by Sugar Pine Mountain. There.
Right, right.
What you can do on some DTV, digital TV boxes, is there's a setting in there to look at the signal strength that's actually coming in. And if you see
and then try to move the antenna, right?
Yeah, did that do any good? Did you see that?
No.
Wow.
It's just nothing.
It's down in the dirt, as they say.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the heads up. Meadow Vista's got other problems like internet access and so forth.
Right. But I have a DSL line at my mom's house, and I get great DSL there. So
well, perfect. You may want to check with AT&T. They have this new thing called Advance TV, I believe. I was down in Sacramento, and they were touting it at one of their stores, and I gave them several phone numbers in the Sacramento area, and they're like, nope. I go,
why
are you trying to sell it?
What they're actually doing, I forget the name of this, is AT&T trying to sell...
UVerse,
over the DSL broadband connection. In most areas, what they then do is promptly turn around and sell you a satellite service and say, oh, we haven't got this broadband system yet. But in my mind, the best offering in that respect is actually the name escapes me. The box that's given out with Netflix.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
come on, rock you.
Rock you. Yeah. We talked about that 2 weeks ago. So that's another alternative for your mom. And actually, it doesn't bring you live TV, but if you subscribe to Netflix, you can get many things basically, you know, download now, instant view.
Oh, wow.
And Paul talked about that. Do you remember the model number on that, Paul?
Just the one machine.
Was it on your...
That Rock You box is the only one they make that does this. If you have a PlayStation of some sort, I forget what, there's a couple of other pieces of machinery that can also do this, but this little black box is the best, basically.
Is there any Linux software? Because I'm pretty well versed in Linux.
Oh, you are? For doing this streaming and storage?
Yeah, because I use VLC for quite a bit of stuff, and VLC has a lot of codecs in it.
That would be the multiple media player, and there's add-ons, which are sort of in the gray area, which can actually decode some of the proprietary streams.
Correct.
There's also, which I talked about earlier, there's an interface called Myth TV, MYTH TV. And that's more than anything, it's just a 10-foot interface so that you can control the box from a distance with a remote and do all this fun stuff play it streaming. The proprietary content that Netflix sends out is Windows Media Player DRM, Digital Rights Management, or more recently Silverlight. And I don't think anyone's... I'll stand to be corrected. I don't think anyone's figured a way to do that other than with this box or on a Windows PC or on a Mac.
Right, okay.
All righty.
I had one other thought on your person that wanted to do their banking from that RV park.
Yeah.
If they had a properly firewalled machine, and then their almost every bank is going to use HTTPS.
Yes. Yeah.
So once the data stream leaves the browser, it should be encrypted, and regardless of what the Wi-Fi is doing, like I say, if you have a properly firewalled machine...
That's the gotcha right there, because anyone else in the RV park that performs a non-stop continuous scan will find some way to break into your machine, even through the firewall, given that there are defects.
Well, what if you have... if you have your Wi-Fi interface firewalled, and you have, like, you know, ShoreWall running...
Yeah, that's a statement that this thing actually works. In other words, firewall software made by, I think it was Black Ice Defender at one point, had a vulnerability where it could be broken in through its own failures.
Yeah.
But basically, I don't trust this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm a wired Ethernet only guy, but anyway, I just thought I'd throw that comment in.
Well, thanks for the heads up there. That's great.
Yeah. Okay. And if you check last show's show notes, and again, thanks to Alex for transcribing those, there is a link there to the Rock You Netflix box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I'll check that out.
Okay. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for the show.
You want to push the button?
Yeah, I'm going to push the button and say, hi, caller, you're next on Zentech here at KBMR. Hi. That's you.
Hi, is that me?
That's you.
Hi, Ms. Ellen.
Hi, Ellen. How are you?
Good, thanks. Listen, I have a Mac question, a little frustration. I'm trying to partition a large external drive, and when I get into the disk utility, it gives me instructions that aren't actually available on the disk utility. In other words, the help says, click on partition, you know, blah, blah. And there is no button to click on.
Well, let me ask, is this OS 10 of some sort? Silly
Pardon
question.
Me?
This is a silly question, but I'm hoping it's OS 10 that you've got.
Yes.
Okay, and when you bring up the disk utility, and listeners should know what we're talking about, is the fact that a new drive attached to a Mac quite often needs partitioning, which means to put a Mac file system on it. Does the disk utility, which is underneath utilities, underneath applications, does that disk utility actually mention your hard drive at all?
Yes, it has a little on the side there that has the internal drive, and it shows the other drive as well.
Okay, and you're sure it really is the other drive, so a word like Mac Store appears on it or something like that?
No, it's the other drive.
You have to be a little bit careful. The disk manager will show you other stuff. It will show you DVD drives and CD drives and flash drives. You have to be absolutely sure that it's really showing you what you think it's showing you.
Well, that's what I'm seeing.
Okay, so it says other drive.
And I'm not even seeing a button that is not available, you know, like a grayed out button.
Okay, bear with me. Does it indicate the size of the drive? Does it indicate it's a 500 gigabyte drive? Or does it indicate something that shows you it really is your drive?
Yes, I believe it does. I'm sitting in my car.
Oh, that's fine.
The NID ditch, so I can't look at it right now.
Okay, the answer, I think, is if things are grayed out or don't appear to work, that's because you haven't selected something. Well, you may have done that, but go ahead and click on the thing that looks like the external drive. And then there should be either, this is from memory, so I'm not too good at it, there's a partition button, and you may actually need to delete the partition even if it's empty. So you click on the option that says number of partitions, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and pick one partition. Have you done that?
I haven't found that information. I haven't been able that choice, that screen window, whatever you call it, hasn't come up for me.
And so what I'm describing is the same as your instructions, and it ain't working that way?
Well, one of the things that I don't believe I've tried, and I may have, this is maybe where it's tripping me up, so I'll have to go home and check. What I'm hearing is that I should click to open that drive rather than simply select it from the list.
I don't think so. The drive itself doesn't need to be open. What you do need to do is tell the disk utility which drive you're talking about and be sure it's the correct drive. And then rather ambiguously, you need to indicate that you're going to create one partition on it. This varies between models of OS X, so
okay,
the instructions may not be exactly the same.
The instructions don't match with what comes up, and that's my frustration. I don't see any place that I can partition the drive. The only thing that I see when I select that drive,
mm-hmm.
and you know, on the list,
mm-hmm.
is down below there's a little thing that says volumes in blue.
Yeah.
You know, that comes up. But it's the screen that gives you the chance to repair the disk, troubleshoot,
yeah.
has RAID.
You're in the right area, yep.
Yeah. But there's nothing. I mean, even when I go through the menu up at the top,
mm-hmm.
on the top bar, menu bar, there's nothing that says partition or
here's what
create
to do.
Volume.
They've given you the instructions for something else. The first thing you have to do is find out which species of pussycat this Mac is. In other words,
okay.
is it leopard or what the heck is it? And you'll do that by going up to the Apple logo in the far upper left,
mm-hmm.
going down to where it says about this Mac, and it will report to you Apple OS 10, 10 point something, like 10.1 or 10.2345678 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
It actually goes currently up to 10.6. What you're then going to do is, in the Google search, indicate the words Apple Disk Utility 10 point whatever it is you found out partitioning. So do a search using the version of the operating system you've got, because to my mind FDisk has changed a little bit every time they come out with a different version of the operating system and they've given you the wrong instructions.
Okay.
You wouldn't happen to know offhand what it is right now, would you?
I don't know what point it is, but it's Tiger.
10.4.
I didn't put it up to Leopard.
Okay, so it's the one before, it's just 10.4. I'm right now just putting in the search term, not like I know the answer directly without one in my possession, 10.4 disk utility partition. I can't guarantee to fix it on the show, but that's what I'd go about for doing this.
Okay.
And if you're in luck, the search results that come up will actually refer to an Apple website somewhere. Mac OS Hints, Mac Forums, About.com, there's a whole bunch of stuff here. Yeah, there's some forums talking about it. So I put in 10.4 disk utility partition.
Okay.
Count that as four words. If you can get it down to four word search. We have time for it now, but I think that may help. Please get back to us.
Okay. Yeah, I might write you an email.
That'd be good.
Zen, all right. Thanks a lot.
Zen at kvmar.org. Thanks for your call.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks,
Alan.
Paul. Bye-bye.
And we're going to go on with our next caller. Let's see.
Glenn's doing it by computer. He's doing the phone patch. You did this once before from Chicago.
Did I?
Yep.
But you know what? I'm having iTunes trouble, so maybe there. Oh, that went away. Let me say next. Well, then I'm going to push.
There's somebody there.
There is somebody there. Hi. You're live on the air.
Hi.
Beep.
Hi.
Is that me?
That's you.
Hey, guys. It's Mikhail.
Hi, Mikhail. How are you?
Good. Real quickie, for your last caller, you need to select the actual drive, not the partition currently of the drive. So in the disk utilities window, when it comes up, you need to select the actual name of the drive. You can't select, say, Paul's Mac.
You need to select
the actual hard drive itself. Then, and only then, in Tiger in particular, will
uh-huh.
the partition show up. You'll see first aid, erase, partition, raid, restore. But if you're selecting one of the others,
uh-huh.
it won't allow you to partition an already partitioned.
This suggests that there's already a partition on this drive, so it's probably partitioned with FAT32 or something.
So point being, that you're going to see something called, like, you know, the name of the drive, whether it's a LaCie or an Oxford or a MacStore or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one you want to click on, and then the partition will show up.
Ah, you're cheating because you've got Macs all over the darn place, and we haven't
got
one here.
The other thing, real quick, I wanted to let you know.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are talking about the Roku player. I've been using one for about 3-4 months now,
mm-hmm.
and it works fabulous, as Paul described a couple weeks ago, but let's be real clear here. There are more than almost a dozen different players.
Right.
Microsoft Xbox, Roku is one, TiVo, the LG BD300, the Samsung BDP2550, there's a BDP2500, and Sony just announced that all their HD TVs that have been recently coming out will be Netflix compatible later this year.
But none so cheap, Mikhail.
Oh, $99 is a great deal, and you've got a 30-day money back as well.
Right.
So, as you know and I know, it's a fabulous one. I have over 250 different instant play films and documentaries and foreign bits and all kinds of stuff queued up in mine. I love it. It's just I haven't enough time to watch the thing.
That's the catch. And I'm told the Sony, I think the Sony PlayStation can play the stuff.
Yeah, the PlayStation
back.
Is also, I thought I mentioned it, sorry, the Xbox.
Yeah, so it's increasing in number.
PlayStation is coming with it, but the Xbox can now. So,
oh, there is a catch. There's a catch with the Xbox. I believe you need a membership, like a gaming membership, in order to use this, I was told.
Right, I think you're right.
So, for my money, the little tiny Rocky Box, it's the size of five stacked CD cases.
I love it, and it's mobile. Yeah. You can just throw it in your bag, take it with you. It takes 2 minutes to set it up somewhere else. Just got to log into their...
In all fairness, I should have mentioned the others, but I like this. Yeah.
All right, guys. Have fun. Okay. Just wanted to mention that stuff.
Thanks a lot, Mikhail. Take care.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Push the button, Mac.
You know, I can't because I'm having connectivity issues. That's why the button's not working.
Bother to heck. The Comrex, the piece of technology we use here in the station.
It's not its problem. It's a problem with...
No, right. I was going to say that we've... it, too, has updates and firmware. We've put new firmware in. It's now up to 2.1C. It's working a lot better. Nevertheless, you still have to be able to communicate with the dear thing.
Yes, and we do have you live on the air. Caller, welcome.
Hi, I have something also to add for that other caller
okay.
that Mikhail was talking about.
Yes.
In addition to what Mikhail said, there's two issues that could possibly be the problem. If she has bought an older external hard drive or an off-brand external hard drive that could be practically brand new, but it's an off-brand, not a common brand, then that hard drive, that external hard drive, should have come with a driver, and she should put the driver on her computer first before she tries to pull up the disk utility.
That used to be common. It's kind of rare now.
Yeah, it would only be if it's a real off-brand, then the driver is, you know, probably not packed in with the Mac OS operating system.
Yeah, we're talking at least more than 5 years old, I would guess.
Yeah, but if it's an off-brand, it might not be packaged with the OS X operating system.
Mm.
And she should go and get a driver and make sure that there's a driver upgrade for OS X, especially if it's an older drive. You know, she might have bought it used. She might have had it from some other computer. She might have even had it from a PC, and it might not be Mac compatible.
You know, because of the cost of flash drives now, I mentioned earlier on that you can get 8 gigabytes of storage without any moving parts for like $16 or $18. It's almost big enough. It's pretty soon flash drives are going to become large enough and cheap enough we can use them for Time Machine backups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would agree that the information in the extreme left-hand column of the disk utility is where her original internal hard drive will be listed and the external. Now, if the external is not coming up, relative to, as you pointed out, Paul, that it should have information, it should have the name of the drive on there, so that there's no doubt that is the external hard drive.
Don't try formatting the wrong drive, in other words.
Well, yeah, and the thing is if it's not there, then she could also check her patch code to see if that's functioning.
I believe she said it was there, and there's another quirk or a twist, which is I've seen drives not come up in a Mac.
Right.
And then I've immediately gone up to the Apple logo and said about this Mac and then pushed the button that says system information, which that runs what's
system
known as system profile.
Yeah.
And the very act of poking the bus, which is poking the electrical interface, suddenly makes a drive come up. It's given a poke in the ribs and it goes, oh me,
yeah,
it's
that
me.
Was the other thing I was going to say. She could go into system profiler to see if it's there. And then that system profiler, whatever it's calling that drive, that's what she should.
That's true.
In the disk utility, which is another way of confirming that's the external hard drive.
I believe Mikhail is onto it, which is this drive has something on it. It should either be deleted or the drive itself should be referred to, not the partition that happens to be on
it. Right, and she doesn't click on anything regarding partition at first. She would want to look on the hard drive, make sure there isn't something on there that she wants to keep.
Because it will go away.
Remove anything, you know, move it over, whatever, anything that she wants to keep. And then at some point before she repartitions it, if there is something on there, she should just erase it.
Right, it's always...
You know, and then partition it.
This is the show of trust in Allah but tie your camel, which is you're convinced there's nothing on the drive, and then you suddenly realize right. when there's literally nothing on the drive that there was something on the drive.
Yeah.
So, thanks for the heads up on that, as
okay.
ever.
Sorry
Bye.
About that, folks. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
And I'll push the next button, which is working now. Caller, you're next on the air. Hi. Caller, that's you. You're live.
Speak to us.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, you're on.
We oh. have just a couple of minutes, so very quickly.
Yeah. I'm planning on getting an iPhone, and what put me over was the tethering and the Shazam. What do you think about that?
Love them both. Now, I haven't tried the tethering. Shazam is an extraordinary piece of software where I had it demoed to me by, now, as you know, KVMR plays pretty obscure music.
Uh-huh.
Mikhail was in here and pointed it through the studio door during a Greg Jewett eclectic special.
Yeah.
And this darn thing knew what it was.
Oh, Lord, I know. That's why I'm going, no way. This is
free software. And that why it's free is because when it identifies the music, it goes, now would you like to buy it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It gets better than that. I use mine. I'm sorry I'm interrupting you, and I've been told about that, and I'm really naughty.
That's okay.
Oh, thank you. I love you. Now... Well, I forgot what I was going to say. Yeah, if you're offline, for example, Glenn and I have got the kind of iPhones that, to put it mildly, are not on the internet all the time because they're not using the phone plan. And if you use Shazam and you point it at music and you're not online, it can't send the signal back to base station to identify it.
Right.
So instead, it will store it up and say, you know, identify it
next time
later.
You're online.
And it puts a
cool.
time stamp on it.
Cool.
The tethering I haven't tried. For listeners out there in listener land,
yeah.
tethering means your ability to receive 3G wireless on your iPhone. And then bridge it across to your laptop. So your laptop gets on the internet tethered through your iPhone. I have not personally tried that.
And again, right. you would need the Edge $30 a month data plan with your iPhone in order to try
it's
to do
one
that.
Up on the Edge, because Edge is like 9600 baud, and this is the 3G stuff that you pay through the nose for.
Okay.
Needs a 3G phone.
Okay.
Third generation phone. Costs the earth, but actually works quite effectively. And I'm told that tethering is now more mainstream than it used to be.
Right. So they now have it in the United States.
Yeah.
Well, this is to do with the software, and it's also to do with the monopoly of the phone company and Apple, and we won't go into it.
So yeah. we need to go on to our next caller. Thanks for
Thank
calling.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Just to remind folks, this is KVMR FM, Nevada City. And there we go. Caller, you're next and live on the air. Welcome.
Hey. I have a couple questions.
Very quickly.
One, I tried to, in trying to send a playlist to Steve Baker,
mm-hmm.
I took a screenshot of a playlist in iTunes
mm-hmm.
and then copied it and attached it to a Word document, and mm-hmm. it came out blank on his on the email. It said that he needed, there was a QuickTime logo or icon, and it said it needed to decompress or something. Is there another way that I can do that, attach that to a document?
Yes, there is, and that's to totally avoid the situation. This is a Mac or a PC?
A Mac.
What you do in the Mac is you have your playlist made up of the things that you were part of the show.
Right.
So you've got 20 songs in the playlist. You click on the playlist and you've got your 20 songs up. You go File, Print, and the print screen comes up as if you're just about to print to a printer.
Uh-huh.
In the lower left, you'll see a box that says PDF.
Create a PDF instead of actually printing to the printer.
And what you're going to love about this is when you finish doing that, the end result actually looks like this, the sleeve or liner notes with the playlist with the artist and albums and times on it.
Okay.
So I didn't answer your question, but I gave you a better solution.
Well, yeah, that'll work. So I'm just making a PDF document instead of a screenshot. It's
totally.
Just a picture that the screenshot takes.
Yeah, right. So in other words, God knows what the original problem was, but I will talk to Stephen.
And this would be much cleaner.
Okay, good. And then the next question is, if I want to... transfer my entire iTunes library to my laptop.
Mm-hmm.
What's the cleanest way to do that? Is it like just connect with FireWire?
Or Mac or PC?
What is it?
Mac or PC?
Mac. Both Mac.
Have you got a dual FireWire cable that goes between machines?
Well, if I don't, it sounds like I need to get that.
That's fairly cheap. What you're going to do, I'll give very quick instructions, and people need to look back through the archive for this. What you do is on the machine that stores the iTunes music that you've got,
right.
You start that machine up and hold the T key down, which turns it into a target FireWire drive.
So go Command T?
Just T.
Oh, just T.
Then boot the machine up as you're holding the T key down, and it comes up in FireWire target mode.
Oh, okay.
On the other machine, you will then fire it up, and you'll see an external hard drive, which is laptop number one.
Mm-hmm.
Under your login profile, like whatever your name is that you've logged in as,
mm-hmm.
you will see music.
Okay.
Underneath that, you'll see a folder called iTunes.
All right.
Drag it to the same place on the new machine, but it will wipe out whatever's on the new machine, so the new machine should be empty of any iTunes.
Okay.
And iTunes should not be open on the target machine.
On the second machine.
On the
right?
second machine. What will happen then is you will have copied across all the playlists, all the music, all of everything, everywhere, so it now replicates perfectly the first machine.
Sweet.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
And that's bringing us up to the top of the hour. I'm so glad we got two... We got 1.5 strikes because I didn't answer the previous question, but I had a workaround, and then this one I actually knew. And you can even go to a PC and do the same thing because it has the same folder structure.
Okay, great.
Thanks for calling. Thanks very much. Okay,
bye-bye
now. And we want to thank you all for listening. We've got Jimmy Accardi coming up with the Rock and Roll Party. And
you're all calm, Jim.
2 until 4, am I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Jim will hyper it up.
Maybe I think we're going to get things rocking and jumping around here.